On the Wintrust Business Lunch, there's Jason Turner joining us once again, the Chief Investment Strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management. Welcome back, Jason.
Thanks for having me, John.
Overview of the markets right now. What are you seeing? What are you liking or worried about?
Overview of the markets right now, we've seen kind of a healthy trend emerge post-inauguration in U.S. equity markets. The markets are struggling to keep their nose above zero today. I think the S&P is up about 0.2% on the day. But the markets are right now, I think, waiting to digest policy changes as they come and are reacting to that apace.
I was watching the scroll on News Nation of all of the things that the president is saying, and every day it's a new menu of options and suggestions or demands, not just of the people in the United States, but businesses and even other countries today. And I have sort of told myself over and over again that there's just no way to know on any given day what the impact or consequences of his actions or attempts are going to be. Do you agree with that? If we're wondering what the markets are going to do, the price of oil, interest rates, et cetera, the president has plans or theories about all of that, but can we know really what's going to happen until it happens?
No, we can guess at what's going to happen until it happens, but some of the hot button issues, whether they are tariffs, which are wrapped in a whole bunch of uncertainty. We've seen various different impacts from tariffs over the last 100 plus years here in the United States, from a calamity in the 1930s to some that have been non-events over the course of that same time period. So that impact remains to be seen. And even things like today's comment about demanding lower interest rates from the Fed, the reality there is those demands don't necessarily impact the Fed since it's supposed to be apolitical. However, in a curious observation, holding off on tariffs has actually caused mortgage rates to come down somewhat because the long end of the bond curve is taking a breather as we wait for tariffs to come as opposed to seeing them on day one.
Jamie Dimon said, everybody relax about tariffs. He said, you don't know what's going to happen. Not only do you not know what's going to happen, you don't know what the consequences of what you don't know is going to happen is going to be. If we do have tariffs, is going to be good or bad or neutral? And we don't even know if we're going to get tariffs. So he told everybody to breathe again. What do you say to Jamie Dimon?
I think that's good advice in the short term, to breathe again. We've got a maybe ticking clock with a February 1st date that's been thrown out. I also think we still have yet to see how many of these tariffs are actually planned to be put in place and how many, like we saw during the first Trump administration, are saber-rattling to try to draw a compromise or a concession on other factors. That would be primary in my mind for Europe and Mexico, for example.
To go back to the president's demand that interest rates drop immediately, how much influence can any president have on the Fed's interest rate reductions or hikes?
I think the Fed has prided itself about removing itself from politics and trying to make the best monetary decision for the country on a go-forward basis. I think Chair Powell said as much. He was asked very pointedly about being removed before his term ends in 2026. And he said quite pointedly that there's no legal basis for removing the chairman of the Federal Reserve before the term ends. So I think the Fed intends to take a apolitical stance and remain there and not be bullied into making a policy decision. That's not to say that the current president won't try.
The term is 10 years, right? And isn't it that way to insulate the Fed from political pressures? A president can't, even if he serves 8 years, maybe do anything about the Fed chair.
That's exactly correct. The Fed chair position has been set up with a term that is designed to insulate it from the election cycle and from demands from Congress or the White House to put the country on the right path from a monetary perspective. And whether we all agree with their decisions or not,
well, there you go.
They should be separate from the process.
Well, what's your advice to the Fed then? Or what do you guess is going to happen? 3 rate cuts, 1 rate cut for 2025?
I think looking at the totality of the economic data today, and the Fed has said they're going to be very data dependent, Right now, the Fed is best served by sitting on the sidelines and not changing rate policy at all. I think the futures markets agree with that. There's a 99%+ probability we see no action at the January meeting. I think some economists have looked out to March or May as the first potential cut. The Fed updated their own projections to say two cuts this year. I would be in the camp of two, maybe a stretch. I would not be surprised to see the Fed with one mid-year cut. I would be not at all surprised to see the Fed sit this year out and not change interest rates for the entirety of the year.
We got to go, but the interpretation of that would be things are pretty good. We don't need to do anything, right?
Yeah, economy's pretty strong. Inflation's a little bit more stubborn. Not an environment where the Fed needs to stimulate the economy or really act aggressively to pull down runaway inflation.
That's Jason Turner, Chief Investment Strategist for Wintrust Wealth Management, wintrustwealth.com. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, John.
Here's Bree Fowler from CNET to tell you exactly what's going to happen with TikTok. Go ahead, Bree.
Well, we really don't know at this point. TikTok, President Trump signed an executive order on his first day, one of many, that will give TikTok another 75 days. Whether this will hold up legally remains to be seen.
Why do you say that?
Well, under the, you know, it's unclear whether the president can actually direct the justice enforcement or the Justice Department to not enforce a law, which is what he's doing.
Right.
This was a law that was passed by Congress, signed by the previous president, and upheld by the Supreme Court. So, you know, can a president just say, don't enforce it? That's very debatable.
But the law did allow a grace period if there was a bona fide, a legitimate negotiation in place. We don't
right.
have, but we don't have that today, do we?
No, not that anyone knows of. The president can grant an extension of up to 90 days. And it's unclear whether the president could actually do that after the original time period had expired. It would have to be beforehand, maybe. And then also, you know, there hasn't been, you know, any kind of deal or, you know, possible sale announced. There have been people that are interested and are bidding, but TikTok continues to maintain that it's not interested in selling.
The site is still active, though, right?
Yeah, you can go to TikTok.com and watch stuff. If you already have it on your phone, the app is up and running after, you know, a lot of drama over the weekend with it going down for a little bit. But if you don't have it, you can't download it to your phone.
Hold on, I'm looking at a video of a giant alligator climbing up somebody's roof or something.
yeah.
Wow. Well, so is it operating then on my phone right now extra legally? I mean, technically it should be shut down right now. Why is it up and running right now?
So what the law does is it enforces the ban by saying that if you're a company that allows TikTok to operate, that you can be fined. And those fines are massive because they're per user, and TikTok has 170 million users, and it's a per day basis. So that can add up pretty quick. The executive order says that they will not be taking action for 75 days against companies that do that. You know, you can take Trump at his word, or you can kind of hold off because, you know, what incentive do companies like Apple and Google have to keep it in their app store if, you know, they're not making any money off of this, really? And, you know, they, in theory, could be prosecuted down the road.
Right. So are you saying that right now the apps that allow me to access you know, my Google or my iPhone that allows me to access TikTok are allowing that? At their own peril.
Yeah, I mean, Apple and Google aren't going to sweep in and pull it off your phone, but they can take it out of the store. And that's what they've done. They haven't put it back yet. But other companies that do kind of the online infrastructure that allow TikTok to operate, you know, like Oracle, companies like that, they've reached deals with TikTok to keep going.
What are the smart people saying? Last question for you on this, Bree. What do we think is going to happen?
I mean, maybe there'll be some kind of a deal. There definitely are companies interested. Trump wants to facilitate one. He wants the U.S. to have, you know, he's talking about a joint venture. I don't know if that actually is legally allowable. And then also, you know, whether Congress will go for it and whether, you know, the law would prohibit something like that. It's just really up in the air right now.
Suppose some of this is dependent on what the courts will do, what the Supreme Court will even do. We know that Donald Trump operates extrajudiciously at times, but if the courts support him, then, quote unquote, you get away with it. But maybe he won't. This really does depend on how the courts interpret what he's doing, right?
Well, and when they can get to it, too. He signed 100 executive orders on Monday, and, you know, a lot of them were kind of dubious as to whether they were legal or not or allowed or under presidential powers. So there's a lot to sort out now, and I don't know if TikTok really rises to the top of the priority pile.
Yeah, right. You've got birthright citizenship, for instance, probably ahead of it in the queue. What about
right.
the new phone from Samsung? What should I know about that?
Well, yeah, like a lot of things these days, they are all about AI. These are the S25 phones, which makes me feel very old because I think I remember covering the S6 not too long ago. But they are the next generation of their flagship phones. They have new AI powers that are supposed to make it easier for you to do things, have your phone do things for you. But at the same time, it may make you a little bit more dependent on that device.
But having AI on your phone is kind of a game changer, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's something that's been kind of going for a while. Apple, you know, added it last year, and Samsung had some stuff before then. It's just that things get more and more sophisticated, and they do things in the background without us even really noticing it. I mean, we all think about AI as being, you know, like the ChatGPTs of the world, but basically, you know, it's a lot of stuff that just goes on behind the scenes that you just kind of get used to.
What's the coolest thing you've seen AI, artificial intelligence, do on any of those platforms, any of those apps? But is there something that you go, wow, that's crazy?
Maybe not the most sophisticated, but, you know, I use an iPhone and I have AirPods and, you know, I go for a run. And when I have my AirPods in, my phone will read me my text messages over my AirPods, which is, you know, nothing new. It's text. It's not hard. But my husband sent a picture to me and the AI or machine learning in my device was able to tell me that it was a picture of a boy with a black and white spotted dog. And that was completely accurate. It was my dog and my son, and I was kind of thrown for a loop.
And I guess that alleviated you from having to look at it while you're driving, say, if it just tells you what the picture is.
Right. I mean, I one of the reasons I always run with headphones, which, you know, you have to make sure you're paying attention to traffic.
Oh, yeah, or if you're jogging,
like
Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, you know, I don't have to pull my phone out and check my messages. I'm always in the loop if the office or a family member needs to get a hold of me.
Bree Fowler is a senior writer at CNET. Bree, it's always a delight to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Great to talk to you, too.
WGN Radio. Let's listen to Mark Hamrick, Washington Bureau Chief, Senior Economic Analyst for Bankrate.com. We hear that markets are doing well, the economy is doing well, but Mark has a little bit of a red flag for us to pay attention to. Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing well. Great to be with you, John. Thank you.
Paycheck to Paycheck Nation. What's the story here?
We are seeing some backsliding here when it comes to Americans' ability to pay emergency expenses from savings. And as I'm sure we've discussed in the many years that I've had the blessing to be able to connect with you, John, that this has always been a problem spot for our country and our economy and our American colleagues. But we're sort of making the opposite of progress here. And that's defined by the survey finding from Bankrate that only 41% of Americans could pay an emergency expense of $1,000 or more from savings. Now, that's a decline from last year, and that's not the direction we want to see. 25% would put that debt on a credit card, pay it off over time, and 43% would use borrowing of some form to pay that expense.
You're not including then people who would pay it on the credit card but then pay the credit card off. So that that person
That's
technically
right.
does have $1,000 for an emergency, even if they're putting it on their credit card. 41% would not be able to pay off that credit card, that next payment, right?
I think that's right. I certainly am a person, and many of my colleagues at Bankrate do the same, use credit cards as an effective tool to leverage, in some cases, cash back, in other cases, to get reward points. But that suggests that we do have the resources to pay that off immediately, as you say.
Man, $1,000 is a lot of money, but you'd like to think that if somebody needed $1,000, they could get it right now without paying interest on that. 41% of us can't do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think about a conversation I had at the grocery store as the chief chef and bottle washer in our household with the cashier the other day, where I asked her, you know, what's the average ticket? What's the largest ticket you've ever seen? I guess that's the curse of dealing with me in the field. But, you know, she said $250, $300 was not unusual for families to pay on a weekly fill up of their grocery card. And just think about that. That's essentially, you know, one fourth to one third of that $1,000. And if we run into sort of the expected, unexpected event, whether it is a car repair where, you know, I think a lot of people would love to have a car repair that costs $1,000 or less compared to the alternative. These are just the things that seem to happen regularly in American life. And even as we've discussed, John, that inflation has been coming down on, let's say, a month over month or a year over year basis, our survey finds that about 7 in 10 of Americans say they're now saving less because of inflation. And similarly, about 70% say they're worried that they would not be able to pay their immediate living expenses in the coming month. We're not talking about 6 months, in the coming month, if they were to lose essentially their job.
I presume the older you are, the more likely it is you'll have $1,000.
That's right. Although at some level, it's even to me at least surprising that more senior Americans don't have those resources to draw from, because that probably speaks to the fact that a good number have not saved sufficiently for retirement or you know, having ongoing budgetary challenges. So in terms of looking at age groups, those that say they could pay this emergency expense of $1,000 or more from savings, to your question, 59% of baby boomers, that's those aged 61 to 79, no doubt some of those retired, they say they can do it, 59%. Then you go down to the bottom of the list, it's the youngest Americans, members of Generation Z, only 28% of those who are age 18 to 28 would be able to do the same.
If you're 18 to 28, that's quite a range. 18, maybe you just started, maybe you're going to school. 28, you should or could easily be working for five or more years. I think it's reasonable to hope that somebody working 5 years would have $1,000 in a savings account. You're saying that 72% of them don't.
Well, and it only goes up to 32% for millennials, right above that, those aged 29 to 44. So, you know, you get a little bit of improvement there. And so, yeah, I think you're right. You know, we think about younger generations or the youngest generations in the workforce do tend to be those that are most financially fragile. They are the ones who face, you know, the way that the economy has changed over the years, not always for the better for them, in the sense of facing higher education expenses, higher housing costs, and the like.
But you don't have to eat eggs. You do have to get your car fixed. So what is driving this? I don't mean inflation. I mean, what is keeping people from being able to sufficiently save $1,000 or more? What's the reason for that?
Well, I mean, all we know is that in our answers, we had a variety of responses that included everything from their employment situation to rising interest rates to inflation or elevated prices. And we know, John, that, you know, when we look at the consumer price index, the main gauge of prices at the retail level, that is up 23% from January 2020. Wage growth has begun to sort of compensate for that over the last year and a half or so, but that's only when we measure the economy in its totality. People obviously at lower income levels, lower wealth levels, less able to cope with that. You know, I just think that life has become essentially an affordability hurdle for such a large cross section of the American public. Even if, let's say, you're working in Chicago, you know, you may aspire to buy a house that is of the middle income variety, but you know that is going to be above the median price nationally of $400,000. You go to Southern California, forget about $400,000. Most of the major markets in the country have home prices that are well above that level. Of course, not everybody's just going into the market right now. A number of people are fortunate to have low mortgage rates, but those who are aspiring to buy a home or even buy an automobile or maintain the insurance on either of those things, paying property taxes, those are higher hills to climb these days as well.
Relatively, I wonder if, in fact, rent is harder for people now than mortgages. That is, if you're a renter, the scarcity and the costs are such that rents are actually more expensive relative to 3, 4, 5 years ago than mortgages are.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, we have been talking, you know, sort of at the national level for years now, essentially about the lack of sufficient supply of housing, and that includes rental opportunities and even existing homes, so-called previously owned homes that are very scarce on the market these days. And multifamily building, whether it provides a rental or a condo, that has picked up over the last year at a remarkable level, but they're still seen as a shortage. And so, you know, as the president takes office and, you know, looks to push the needle on that somewhat, there are a lot of things that mitigate against it. It's the high cost of building materials and regulations at the state and local levels as well.
Mark Hamrick is the Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst over at Bankrate. Result of their latest survey, 41% of us don't
41.
Have $1,000 or more for an emergency expense. Okay, Mark, sober reminder, but let's pay attention to that. Thanks for your help today.
Thank you, my friend. Take good care.
Let's get you more business news now. Here's Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The Stellantis plant at Belvedere near Rockford will be reopening. The company made that announcement yesterday with an opening target date of 2027. That should bring back 1,500 union jobs. Stellantis also plans to make investments in production facilities in Kokomo, Indiana, and Toledo, Ohio. Do you have an iPhone with TikTok installed? They're fetching a lot of money on eBay. After the TikTok ban last weekend in the U.S., those who deleted or never downloaded TikTok are in the dark since it's not available on Apple and Google app stores in this country. Some iPhone owners who kept TikTok downloaded are selling used or brand new phones. One eBay user listed a phone with TikTok for $10,000. Other listings range from $500 to $25,000. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Here comes the business of food. Here comes Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And let's talk about the biggest disruptor over the past year or so in the business of food. And Wegovy and Mounjaro and all of the GLP-1 drugs that more and more of us are using for weight loss. And people on these drugs eat less and eat differently. And that has the grocery business scrambling to keep up.
I think there's a revolution about to happen.
Who she is and more about the revolution after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDrivesChicago.com. On the phone is Sally Lyons Wyatt. She works at Chicago-based Circana, which keeps track of what we spend our money on at retail stores. And oh boy, things have changed since more of us started taking those GLP-1 drugs.
Across the first year, they weren't going into the grocery store, the mass store, as often to purchase as much as they were purchasing before.
Yeah, that makes sense because the drugs make you eat less, but people on the drugs are also pickier about what they eat more of.
Eating more protein, eating more fiber, getting more hydration.
And pickier about what they eat less of.
Maybe saturated fats, high sugar.
The Circana numbers show the hardest hit areas of the store include the frozen food aisle.
That was the one department that saw the largest decline, roughly about 3 percentage point shift in what consumers were purchasing.
And some of that was just labeling.
Not enough information on the package, not enough from a portion control size.
How about beverages?
It saw a little bit of a decline through the first year. However, we found that drinkware had an uptick with these consumers.
Meaning Yetis and similar containers where people are doing what they're supposed to be doing, drinking more water?
Exactly.
Okay, let's go to the snack aisle.
We saw a slight decline in salty snacks as well.
Overall, she says the results from the Circana survey show it's a wake-up call to the food industry.
This is going to revolutionize not only the assortment, but it's going to impact probably what we see in the store and how things are merchandised. Those that haven't started to work on a strategy are behind. They need to get on it now.
Sally Lyons-Wyatt from Circana. On the food calendar, it's National Pie Day. Save a piece of cherry for me, please. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Okay, let's talk about tax time. Mark, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Very exciting time, John. Glad to be here.
Really? Exciting, says an accountant, I guess, or a tax information officer. What's exciting about it? What's different about it?
Well, 100 million Americans, per last year's data, and likely this year, will enjoy a $300 billion, with a B, distribution from the Treasury over the next 82 days and 10 or so hours. So it's always exciting when 100 million people are getting $300 billion, much needed in many cases, and that probably is a conservative estimate.
Yeah,
some
wow.
More, some less, and that's the distribution of the tax refunds over the next 3 months.
And as a reminder that we give the government too much use of our money for a year, right?
Well, that being said, it's there now. Can't fix it, but you can go get it, and the earlier the better.
I think a lot of us feel like, fine, you can have it for a year. What was I going to do? Spend it? It's sort of like a forced savings plan, even if there's no interest on that savings, right?
Oh, I totally agree, John. I've had many arguments with academians, philosophers, flat earth people. They all think a big refund's terrible. And I will tell you, after 40 years in my early academia, I used to believe that. As a CPA, I thought big refunds, bad use of money. But with the volatility of the markets, volatility of cryptocurrency, and just plain bad investing techniques by most people who go buy cigarettes or Starbucks, it's good to get a $3,000 refund if you spend it wisely. And we've done many surveys. So people go buy insurance, they buy tires, they buy appliances. They don't go to the big kegger in Las Vegas like you would think. It is a good thing for people that it makes sense for, and if that's your thing, I met a guy once, he saved rolls of quarters, he had $50,000 worth, it worked for him, hard to steal, he had a nice nest egg, I don't judge, but I do believe a big refund is not as bad as the academics and philosophers and flat earth people would tell you it is, if you spend it wisely.
I try not to take financial advice from flat earth people. So what should we be watching out for this year? There's always tax fraud. Are there new tax laws that we should be especially aware of?
Oh, it's a cornucopia of things to watch for. Tax fraud ever present on a $300 billion distribution. The bad guys know about that. You know, tax scammers are everywhere. Be vigilant on that. If it looks too good, seems too good, it's too good. No one's going to text you or email you or call you from the IRS. Know that for sure. And I'll start by saying some of the changes that you see this year are just the front end of what is going to be a tsunami of change over the next 3 years. Yeah, in particular for 24, though, we've seen a big, big bunch of questions on the new 1099K threshold. And even though the form is not new and you know, the tax implications of it are not new. This new threshold that says if you get paid through a third-party app like PayPal or Apple Pay or Venmo, if you've got more than a certain amount, and the old amount was $20,000 and 200 transactions, you know, you'd get a 1099-K and so would the IRS. For 2024, the current year, the number's been reduced as part of a three-year transition. For 2024, it's $5,000 over the year. For 2025, the year we're currently already about 10% through, the number's $2,500. And 26, 11 months from now, the number's $600. So if you had more than $5,000 in payments from your side gig, your hobby, your hustle, you know, selling Taylor Swift tickets even, if you've made more than $5,000, you're going to get a 1099-G this year saying you got paid, and so is the IRS, and you're going to have to account for that. Now, if it's personal money, you're not supposed to get one. But that being said, you know, if you didn't fill out the paperwork right or the description right or your application on the Venmo platform right, then you may get one and have to account for that as well. But 1099-K threshold, it's a pretty big deal, and this is part of a three-year transition.
The recipient gets it, not the sender gets it, right?
That's correct. The recipient gets it, and so does the IRS. That's
how does the IRS know that I Venmoed you $5,000 to help care for my parents?
The third-party platform tracks all those transfers, and as soon as you strike that threshold, they send one to you, they send one to the IRS, they assume it's business because you didn't mark it as personal or describe it as personal. So it's supposed to be for business. But that being said, you know, dolphins get caught in the shrimp nets just the same. So you're going to have to arrange for that. You can't just summarily dismiss it saying, oh, this is gas for my daughter at college, because the IRS now has it, and you'll need to reconcile that on your tax return. It's not necessarily taxable, but it also might be taxable, and you just might have got some bad information from TikTok that my side gig is a hobby. It's not taxable. I made $30,000.
Yeah,
that's not
right.
The rule either.
Okay, but then for people who are dead to rights, as I just mentioned, my parents pay people with an app more than $5,000 a year for their care. Those people are going to be hard-pressed to dodge the tax consequences of that.
Well, when you say you paid for their care, they could be an in-home caregiver. That could be their business. It may very well be taxable.
Oh, well, what if they... 100%. I don't know how else you would... it's not a hobby when I'm giving you money to care for them, or they're giving...
And that's the multi-trillion dollar, you know, issue that's in front of the IRS and in front of Congress with our $35 trillion gap. There's a lot of people who either for one reason misunderstand the rule, second reason plausible deniability, or third reason they're just looking to not report it. You know, they've not been reporting that income. The new third-party platform rules, especially when it gets to $600 in 11 months, that's going to catch a lot of people. So get your house in order, report it if you're supposed to. You can't just say, dog ate my homework. A little harder this year, a little harder 25. Lot harder in 26.
Okay, Mark, we're out of time. You got to come on my show a lot more between now and April 15th and then after April 15th as well.
Well, we got a new 1099 DA for the crypto people. Be watching for that too. Talk as you need to, John.
Mark Stieber is the Chief Tax Information Officer at Jackson Hewitt Tax Services. Click on jacksonhewitt.com.